Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Hello, it's 8 a.m. in Tokyo, 10 p.m. in Sydney, and 6 p.m. here in Atlanta. Good to have you with us. I'm Linda Kincaid, in for Julia Chatterley. And wherever you are in the world, this is your First Move. A very warm welcome to First Move. Here's what you need to know. Nikki Haley suspends her bid for the White House, making it almost certain the presidential race will be a rematch between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. A Russian missile explodes in Ukraine near President Zelensky, who is meeting with the Prime Minister of Greece. Clashes on the South China Sea, Philippine Coast Guard and Chinese vessels collide in disputed waters. And a new study shows cities along the U.S. coastline are sinking at alarming rates. All that coming up. But first, Donald Trump's last remaining rival in the race to the Republican nomination has suspended her presidential campaign, setting a course for American voters to once again choose between the former president and Joe Biden. Nikki Haley, who was once a U.S. ambassador to the United Nations under the Trump administration, made the announcement after Super Tuesday's results came in. She did not, though, endorse her former boss. On Super Tuesday, more than a dozen states held their primaries. Haley won Vermont, but it was a landslide victory for Trump. The former president had already won every contest before that. Our Jeff Zeleny has more.
Tonight, the curtain finally goes up on a historic presidential rematch. Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Emerging from Super Tuesday primaries as the effective nominees of their parties. But there are warning signs in winning, with both men facing distinct challenges of rebuilding their coalitions. Nikki Haley, the last standing Republican rival, suspended her campaign without offering an endorsement.
It is now up to Donald Trump to earn the votes of those in our party and beyond it who did not support him. And I hope he does that.
After months of warning Republicans about Trump's vulnerabilities, she bluntly said the burden is on the former president to win over her supporters and unify the party.
At its best, politics is about bringing people into your cause, not turning them away. And our conservative cause badly needs more people. This is now his time for choosing.
Any fence mending got off to a rocky start, with Trump saying on social media, Nikki Haley got trounced last night in record-setting fashion. President Biden struck a different note and extended his hand, saying, Donald Trump made it clear he doesn't want Nikki Haley's supporters. I want to be clear. There is a place for them in my campaign. It's far from certain where Haley voters ultimately will go, but an analysis of CNN exit polls from five states found only 19% said they would be satisfied with Trump as the nominee, and 79% dissatisfied. In the closing days of the primary, voters expressed the challenges of unity.
Trump can't win without her supporters, you know, and calling her names isn't going to help him win.
Do you worry that some of her supporters may go to Biden?
Maybe third party.
8 months before the general election, the Republican Party is rallying around Trump.
November 5th is going to go down as the single most important day in the history of our country.
Senator Mitch McConnell, who hasn't spoken to Trump in more than 3 years, offered his endorsement, saying, it should come as no surprise that as the nominee, he will have my support. Tonight, after a string of Democratic primary victories, President Biden is preparing to make his case at the State of the Union address on Thursday, a primetime opportunity to tackle myriad challenges he faces to win re-election. Biden easily swept away long-shot rivals like Dean Phillips, but a series of protest votes made clear he faces the task of uniting Democrats, too, like in Minnesota on Tuesday, where Uncommitted received 19% of the vote. With a general election contest finally taking shape, history will be tested anew, as Trump seeks to become the first president since Grover Cleveland was voted out of office to be sent back for a second term.
I want to bring in Maria Cardona, CNN political commentator and Democratic strategist. Good to see you.
Hey, Linda. Thank you.
So, Nikki Haley suspended her campaign, though she didn't endorse Trump, although she didn't disparage him either, other than to say that he needs to earn the support of her voters, of her supporters. What do you think this means for both Trump and also Haley's political future?
So I think moving forward, I'm glad Nikki Haley did not come out and endorse Trump. I hope she doesn't endorse him, though my understanding is that probably at the end of the day, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, she will endorse him. But I think that she has done something that is really important that no one else in the Republican Party has been able to do, and that is take the truth to Donald Trump. I think she did it a little bit too late, which is one of the reasons why she didn't have as much of a slice of Republican voters as she maybe could have had she started to go after Donald Trump with the truth about his character, about his image, about his vision, about what he represents. But she didn't do it. She did it late in the game. And she did it late in the game because she did not want to alienate his voters. And so I think moving forward, at some point, whenever she calculates, she will probably come out and endorse Donald Trump. But I also think, importantly, what she has done with her campaign and in staying into the primaries this far, she has illuminated a real weakness for Donald Trump. You know, we talk about Joe Biden's weaknesses, and yes, going into the election in November, he is going to have to boost and build up his coalition, and that's exactly what his campaign is focused on doing. But Donald Trump, in all of these primaries, he did not get 10, 20, 30, even up to 40% of voters in many of these states. And what that says to me is that there is a slice within the Republican Party that does not want to see him as a nominee and will not support him, to Jeff Zeleny's piece, right? And I think that's a danger for him moving forward.
I wanted to ask you about that, Marie, because the recent New York Times Siena poll pointed to the fact that almost half of Nikki Haley's supporters voted for Biden in 2020. So what does Biden have to do to ensure he wins them back, especially in those battleground states?
That's a great question. And I think he started to do that with the very gracious, very decent and civil statement that he put out after Nikki Haley suspended her campaign, essentially inviting with open arms her supporters to join his campaign and reiterating the same messages that Nikki Haley was communicating about the danger that would be Donald Trump if he's given another 4 years in the Oval Office. And I think that's a message, Linda, that you're going to see throughout the campaign. He's going to reiterate it in certain ways, in very specific ways, tomorrow night during the State of the Union. And then moving forward, he is going to continue to underscore that message, because at the end of the day, you know, with even with all of the polls that show Joe Biden behind, and I do have to have this caveat, there are other polls that actually show Joe Biden ahead. So the campaign is not paying attention to these polls. They are looking at the information to say, here's where we have to shore up our coalitions, and that's what they're going to do. But at the end of the day, it's all going to be about a contrast. And the Biden campaign believes very strongly that the American people are going to side with a decent, accomplished, civil, president who has woken up every day for the last 3 years and will continue to do so if given the chance for another 4 years to focus on solving the problems that are so important to the American people, versus Donald Trump, who is a sex offender, an insurrectionist, a fraudster, somebody who will bring chaos, crazy, criminality, confusion, and cruelty back to the Oval Office for another 4 years.
So, Maria, what would you like to see tomorrow night from Joe Biden in the State of the Union address? Because there are a lot of voters that want to see energy, passion, vigor. Mm-hmm. What does success mean? Sorry, I just need to interrupt you. We're just hearing that the verdict in the Rust trial has just come through. Let's listen in.
We find the defendant, Hannah Gutierrez, guilty of involuntary manslaughter as charged in count one. We find the defendant, Hannah Gutierrez, not guilty of tampering with evidence as charged in count two.
All right, thank you. You may be seated. Let me get those forms, retrieve those forms from you. I'm going to do what's called polling the jury. What I need to put on the record is that this is your individual verdict, okay? So I'm going to start with the gentleman in the back. Is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes, Your Honor.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Sir, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict? Ma'am, is this your verdict?
Yes.
Ma'am, is this your verdict? Okay, thank you. All right, so you've completed your service. Thank you so much for being here. It was a long trial. People may want to talk to you. You know, this has been pretty much a lot of publicity, and you don't have to, okay? So you can just simply say, I do not wish to talk, and move on, and if anybody bothers you, we really try to protect your privacy. If anybody bothers you, simply call my division, and we'll figure out what to do. But you also may talk, okay? So it's entirely up to you, okay? All right. So you can escort them out.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
All right. I'll rise.
George, just a minute. Ryan.
So you've just been watching the verdict of the involuntary manslaughter trial of the Rust film Armorer. She was found not guilty. We're going to bring you more on that story as it comes to hand. We know that the jury had been deliberating 4 hours. We will have more later in this show. Well, I want to move to Ukraine now. A terrifying close shave for President Volodymyr Zelensky. A deadly Russian missile struck just a short distance from him as he was hosting the Greek prime minister. At least 5 people were killed in the attack in Odessa. That's according to Ukraine's Navy. A source says the strike hit just 500 meters away from the presidential convoy. Here was Mr. Zelensky after that attack.
We saw this strike today. You can see who we are dealing with. They don't care where they strike. I know that there are victims today. I don't know all the details yet, but I know that there are dead and wounded. We need to defend ourselves first and foremost. The best way to do that is with an air defense system.
Frederick Platten is on the story for us and joins us now live. Good to have you with us, Fred. So as the Greek Prime Minister said, it's one thing to hear about the war, but it's another to experience it. And it certainly came close, that deadly explosion.
Yeah, it's extremely close. And I think that there's several aspects to this that really show how concerning this all of this probably was. Of course, there was a source that we heard from, Linda, that says the strike was about 500 meters away. Well, there's a lot of very big Russian missiles and cruise missiles that actually have a margin of error of about 500 meters. So that is something that definitely could have gone very, very wrong very easily. Firing a large rocket like that while the head or the chief government of a NATO country is on the ground there with the Ukrainian president. So all this certainly underscores just how close that hit was. Another thing that I heard from Volodymyr Zelensky also, where he said that they didn't just hear the explosion take place. They actually saw the missile fly in and felt the explosion. That also goes to show just how big that blast must have been. And we heard there Volodymyr Zelensky in the press conference afterwards saying that they were killed and wounded in the incident. And at that point, he hadn't had all the information yet, but he had then later found out that there were five people who were killed and a number of wounded. It's unclear how many wounded. The Ukrainians really hadn't had any numbers at that point in time. Of course, we don't know whether or not this was a targeted attack, possibly, against the Ukrainian president. There certainly aren't any strong indications that it necessarily was the case. The Russians have actually come out, Linda, and they've said that they were targeting and claim that they hit a warehouse with unmanned sea drones in it. Of course, all this comes just a day after the Ukrainians claim that they destroyed a Russian warship with such sea drones. So it could have been retaliation for that. Nevertheless, in any case, a pretty close call there for the Ukrainian president and also for the Greek prime minister as well, Linda.
Yeah, it certainly was. And obviously, Ukraine continues to battle Russia, but it continues to beg for supplies, ammunition, weapons. It's holding Russia back, but it certainly needs a great deal more help right now.
Well, I would certainly say that right now on the battlefield, the initiative is definitely on the Russian side. They have a lot more ammunition, they have a lot more troops, and they certainly have also now, at this point in time, found a way to get their Air Force more involved in their efforts. So the Ukrainians definitely on the back foot at this moment. But you're absolutely right that by and large, the Ukrainians, despite having less manpower and less ammo, a lot less ammo, are by and large still able to hold the Russians up. They've lost some places. These are not strategic losses. I would say by and large, it's still very much a stalemate on the ground. But of course, with every day, the lack of ammunition becomes more pronounced on the part of the Ukrainians. And so right now, they are saying the situation is dire. They need ammo as fast as possible. But they also, for instance, need those F-16 jets that the Ukrainians have been training on for a while to get to the battlefield as fast as possible as well. Right now, difficult situation for the Ukrainians, but they are, as you say, still very much holding on, Linda.
All right. Frederick Blyton for us. Good to have you on the story. Thanks so much. Well, Coast Guard vessels from China and the Philippines have collided in disputed waters off the South China Sea. This is the latest incident in a string of maritime confrontations between the two countries. Our Ivan Watson reports.
Water cannons and the collision of heavy ships.
Philippine vessels, this is China Coast Guard.
CNN getting a rare chance to witness the David and Goliath confrontation between the Philippines and China in the South China Sea.
We are going to curtail your behavior.
The Chinese ships make their move at dawn, outnumbering and swarming a small convoy from the Philippines.
We have a very good view of a large Chinese Coast Guard ship. You can see it written on the side of the vessel, and it is currently steaming, I would say, maybe two stone throws away from this Philippines Coast Guard ship. And that's not all. Look over to the starboard side here. There is another Chinese Coast Guard ship right here.
Not far away, another Chinese ship collides with another Philippine ship. Fortunately, no one's hurt.
You are sailing within the Philippine Exclusive Economic Zone. What is your intention? Over.
I'm aboard the BRP Cabra, a Philippine Coast Guard ship. Its mission, escort two resupply boats to the Second Thomas Shoal, a teardrop-shaped reef claimed by both the Philippines and China, even though it's clearly much closer to Philippines territory. For more than 20 years, China ignored competing claims from smaller countries, occupying and eventually building man-made islands on top of several contested reefs and shoals. In 1999, an unusual step from the Philippines. It grounded the Sierra Madre, a rusting World War II-era ship, on Second Thomas Shoal. Filipino Marines have been guarding it ever since. Our convoy is supposed to resupply those Marines, but a much larger ship swerves dangerously close to the BRP Cabra and eventually pulls in front, stopping it in its tracks. Meanwhile, this resupply boat doesn't stand a chance.
That little boat in front is a Philippines resupply boat, and it is currently being pursued by one, two, three, at least four Chinese ships.
They blast the boat with water cannons.
shattering windows and lightly injuring four service members on board, forcing the crew to abort their mission. The Chinese fleet includes what look like civilian vessels.
We're currently blocked and surrounded by what look like ordinary fishing boats that are flying Chinese flags, and they're working in tandem with the Chinese Coast Guard. They appear to be members of China's maritime militia, a way for Beijing to project power here in the South China Sea.
Beijing now accuses the Philippines of being dishonest and deliberately stirring up trouble.
The Philippines' rights-infringing and provocative attempts will not succeed.
But the Philippines remains defiant.
If the hope of China is to weaken the Philippine resolve, they will be sorely disappointed.
The night before the confrontation, we steamed past a U.S. Navy ship, the USS Mobile, apparently being shadowed from a distance by this Chinese Navy ship and helicopter. A looming question: would the U.S. come to the help of its mutual defense treaty ally, the Philippines, if tensions escalate further with China, owner of the world's largest navy? Ivan Watson, CNN, on the South China Sea.
And as I mentioned earlier, we've got some news just in. A verdict has been reached in the trial involving the armorer who was working on the set of the movie Rust. In 2021, cinematographer Helena Hutchins was fatally struck by a live round of ammunition fired from a prop gun held by actor Alec Baldwin. Hannah Gutierrez-Reed has now been found guilty in her involuntary manslaughter trial. She was acquitted of evidence tampering. The armorer, who was responsible for firearm safety and storage on the movie set. We've got much more news coming up after a short break. Stay with us. You're watching CNN.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome back to First Move. I'm Linda Kincaid. A good Thursday morning to you if you are waking up with us from Asia. In today's Money Move, U.S. stocks were on the comeback trail Wednesday after posting losses earlier in the week with tech stocks in the lead. Stocks rose as the Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell told U.S. lawmakers the central bank should be able to begin cutting interest rates sometime this year. Powell, however, saying the Fed is not ready to cut just yet.
We want to see a little bit more data so that we can become confident and so that we can take that step of beginning to reduce policy rates. It's a very important step. We think because of the strength in the economy and the strength in the labor market and the progress we've made, we can approach that step carefully and thoughtfully and with greater confidence. And when we reach that confidence, the expectation is we will do so sometime this year. We can then begin dialing back the restriction on our policy.
Powell delivered his testimony during another highly volatile day for the New York Community Bank. The company's shares finishing the session up 7% on news it had raised $1 billion in critical funding from a group of investment firms. But that followed a more than 40% plunge earlier in the day. The bank's shares have fallen more than 60% so far this year amid concerns over its commercial real estate lending. The outlook for commercial real estate remains uncertain following the COVID lockdowns and the rise of remote work. Parts of East Asia are seeing a stormy close to the week, and it's looking pretty soggy in some parts of the US too. Chad Myers joins us now. Pretty soggy where we are, Chad. How's it looking in Asia?
And it's going to get soggy in New York City. If you're on a plane headed toward the northeast part of the U.S., there's going to be an awful lot of rain that may get in your way for a while. The cool air, Linda, is still trying to hang on for China and also into Japan. I know the summer and spring's trying to push it away, but it's just not there yet. Even storm chasers from Nagano Prefecture are sending me pictures and video of the snow still coming down here. And they're happy. That's what they want to do. They want to go play in it. It's why they live there. But it's not going to snow in Tokyo. Temperatures are going to be well above freezing here. But the cool air is trying to get pushed away. It's going to take a while. It's going to take another week, really, before we really begin to see temperatures warm up significantly, at least above normal for Tokyo there by the beginning of next week. Down here in Australia, some heavy rain in the NT, a lot of heavy tropical-like rainfall, nothing really organized that's spinning, but notice how much rain is still to come here. There will be places with 250 millimeters under some of these severe thunderstorms, so that could cause some localized flooding without a doubt. And then temperatures are going to be held down where it's raining, but still warm there down to the south as we start to work our way into fall. Here's the rain we talked about in the northeast, and likely if you are headed to the airport or on your way to the airport here in Beijing or Tokyo and you're headed here, by the time you get here, the rain will be gone. But at least for now, flood watch is in effect. Likely 100 millimeters of rain will come down over the next 12 hours and then move away from Boston and on up toward the northeast and away from the northeast U.S. Just keep it in mind. If you can pack a little umbrella with you, I recommend it.
Umbrella or a raincoat, either will do.
And you won't have to buy one on Times Square.
That's true. They're everywhere. Chad Myers, good to have you with us. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Well, still to come tonight, violence is spiraling out of control in Haiti with a top gang leader warning of civil war. We'll have a live report when we return. Welcome back to First Move. I'm Linda Kincaid. Here is a look at your international headlines this hour. And the U.S. Supreme Court says it will hear arguments over the next month over whether Donald Trump may claim immunity from prosecution in the federal election subversion case. Timing is key here. The April hearing date means Trump could potentially face trial before the 2024 election. At least two crew members have been killed in a Houthi attack on a ship in the Gulf of Aden. According to the U.S. officials, they are the first fatalities since the Houthis began targeting ships in the Red Sea. The campaign is in response to the Israel-Hamas war in Gaza. A spokesperson for the U.S. Department called the deadly attack, quote, sadly inevitable. Thousands of Polish farmers clashing with police outside of the country's parliament. It's the latest in a wave of protests across Europe as farmers take to the streets to protest EU environmental regulations. Farmers in Poland are also criticizing cheap imports from Ukraine, which they say are undercutting their prices. Well, a group of protesters broke down the doors of Mexico's presidential palace Wednesday. Many of them are believed to be the parents of 43 students who were kidnapped a decade ago. Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador has promised to solve the case when he first came to power. He admitted today that the case is still unsolved. Well, in the past few hours, the UN Security Council has been holding a private meeting on the crisis in Haiti. It's a situation beyond untenable, in the words of the UN's human rights chief. The capital has been overwhelmed in recent days by gang violence. One gang leader is now warning a civil war and genocide if the prime minister remains in power. He resurfaced Tuesday in Puerto Rico, ending speculation on his whereabouts. Our David Culver is covering this story from New York and joins us now. David, the images that we're seeing coming out of Haiti are terrifying. Children with their arms up to show that they're not armed while they're walking past bodies on the street. The UN Security Council, of course, held this private meeting. Is it likely we'll see the UN-backed deployed police force here?
It's looking increasingly like that, Linda, and you're right. The images, they're just desperate. I mean, we were there a couple of weeks ago, and what has transpired in the past, I would say 72-plus hours or so, has been a dramatic spiraling downward. I mean, as we were there, we didn't think it could get much worse at times, but now here we are. It is a very, very dire situation that folks there are dealing with. And as to what's going to potentially stabilize Haiti right now, to what you said, the Kenyan police officers being deployed, yeah, that's a possibility that this could help. This is about 1,000 police officers that Prime Minister Ariel Henry has signed with Kenya's leader to deploy any day now. We're told that that could be imminent. The issue with that, though, is you have foreign forces going in to Haiti, and namely going into Port-au-Prince, which is 80%, that's the estimate right now, controlled by gangs. And as we were there on the ground, folks were telling us they do not want foreign intervention. They're pushing back on that heavily, and they don't want the U.S., Canada, or any other U.N. country to be forcing their way upon them. And so they feel like this could be that intervention that is just something that's unnecessary. They instead want to find stability another way. The question is, how do you get to that? And right now, the drama that's playing out with Henri and not knowing where exactly he is just contributing to the uncertainty. Essentially, what it looks like is that you have a gang coup and that they are the ones dictating things. Now, Henri is claiming he's still in power, and the U.S. for now is saying that they certainly back him and they're the ones who are going to deal with him, and the U.N. were echoing that too. But Linda, the question going forward is, are they going to sustain that support? And the Miami Herald has been reporting that the U.S. has actually been trying to force Henri to step aside. Now, the U.S. and the White House in particular pushing back against that claim, say that they instead want to push towards a transitional process, Linda, that they feel will bring some sort of stability. But it does not seem like we're anywhere close to that right now.
Yeah. So the Prime Minister, of course, out of the country, struggling to hold on to power while you've got this former elite police officer who is leading this federation of gangs wanting to force the Prime Minister out. How much power, how much sway does that former police officer have in the country?
It seems like you have some of these rogue voices that'll pop up here and there. But given that they're in the country, Linda, they seem to have more sway than the person who is not in the country, and that is the Prime Minister. And so it looks like these gangs are able to bring up as much support as possible. What is really interesting, and this has been a change, again, from when we were there just a couple of weeks ago, is that a police source has been telling us they're seeing an unprecedented level of gang coordination. Now, this is really concerning because you've got dozens of gangs within Port-au-Prince alone, and these are rival gangs, and they have turf wars, and they fight over who's going to have what street in each part of a neighborhood. And so for them to now be a unified force, it is frightening to police. One Haitian security source telling us that they feel like they've been abandoned. And so to looking at what could potentially stabilize it, what could bring some sort of calm, maybe it's this Kenyan police officer deployment. But the folks who are on the ground, and certainly those who are armed, and there are an increasing number of them, are threatening to push back against that in a very violent manner, Linda. So this could be explosive, and it could be certainly deadly for even more Haitians if we see Henri go back into an environment where right now he is not welcomed.
All right. David Culver, good to have you on the story. We will stay across that one. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Well, I want to go back to this hour's breaking news. The armourer who was working on the set of the movie Rust has been found guilty of involuntary manslaughter. Hannah Gutierrez-Reed was responsible for firearms safety and storage on the movie set. She was acquitted on a separate charge of evidence tampering. In 2021, the cinematographer Helena Hutchins was shot and killed by a live round fired from a prop gun held by actor Alec Baldwin. Josh Campbell is covering the story and joins us now live. Josh, good to have you with us. So after 2.5 hours of deliberation, the jury found her guilty of involuntary manslaughter, not guilty of evidence tampering. Just take us through this decision.
Yeah, this verdict, Linda, coming very quickly, as you mentioned, just 2.5 hours of deliberation by this jury in the U.S. state of New Mexico. What they were charged with was determining whether or not Hannah Gutierrez Reed, who, as you mentioned, was the weapons handler on the set of the movie Rust back in 2021, when the gun that was being held by actor Alec Baldwin went off, killing the film's cinematographer. Prosecutors in New Mexico had alleged that because Gutierrez Reed was responsible for weapon safety on the set, she was negligent and responsible for a live round of ammunition making its way into that gun, ultimately resulting in that fatal shot. And after 10 days of testimony, hearing from 37 witnesses, again, this jury now determining that she is indeed guilty of involuntary manslaughter. That second charge she faced for witness tampering, that stemmed from an allegation by prosecutors that on the day of the shooting, after she was interviewed by police, she had allegedly handed off a small bag of white powder, which authorities suspected could be cocaine. Her sobriety has been a key focus of this this whole trial by prosecutors, saying that she had had a history of, you know, being hungover and drinking during the filming of that movie. But the jury ultimately determining no, she was not guilty on that second charge of tampering with evidence. Now, of course, this trial has been watched around the world, particularly by those in the entertainment industry, because folks are wondering if this will now set a precedent. Hannah Gutierrez Reed, she didn't shoot anyone. She was not holding the weapon. Prosecutors that provided no direct evidence about how live ammunition actually got onto the set of that movie. But now she has been found guilty as a member of the crew on the set for not ensuring a safe environment. So just a truly, truly stunning verdict here coming in very short order.
Yeah, it was very quickly, that deliberation, as you say. So this 26-year-old guilty of involuntary manslaughter. Just when could she be sentenced and what could she face?
So the date is not yet certain. The judge in the case has adjourned for the day. That sentencing will come at a later date. But based on this one charge alone, involuntary manslaughter, she faces up to 1.5 years in state prison, as well as a $5,000 fine. So we're talking about, you know, not an insignificant amount of time. There could have been a lesser charge that was brought, which would have resulted in less jail time, but the jury ultimately finding her guilty of the most severe charge that prosecutors had brought, and that was involuntary manslaughter. Of course, now looking ahead, actor Alec Baldwin has his own trial to contend with. He has also been charged with involuntary manslaughter in the case. He has pleaded not guilty. His trial is set to take place this summer. But, you know, I've been talking with legal experts who say that the one benefit that he has now, his defense team, is they've already seen now how the government put on its case in this trial, providing the witnesses, listening to the evidence, going through the exhibits. That provides a significant benefit to now prepare for his trial. And of course, we'll wait and see whether he actually pleads to anything or maintains his not guilty plea. And we ultimately see him in a courtroom in the state of New Mexico this coming summer.
All right. No doubt we'll be following that closely. Good to have you on the story for us, Josh Campbell. Thanks very much.
Thanks, my friend. Thank you.
Well, still to come, U.S. coastal cities are sinking faster than previously thought. We're going to break down why and how it could turn deadly as climate change heats up.
The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish. Celebrities of all kinds are speaking publicly about their therapeutic trips, so to speak. It turns out there is a burgeoning industry ready to serve the new influx of people who find themselves turning away from traditional mental health therapy. The gap between what we know and what we don't about psychedelic therapy. Listen to The Assignment with me, Audie Cornish, on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome back. Dozens of U.S. coastal cities are sinking, and faster than originally thought. That's the takeaway from a study published in the journal Nature. The main culprits: pumping groundwater as well as oil and gas extraction. As cities sink and sea levels rise, it's a recipe for disaster. One big risk: flooding, especially along the Gulf Coast and the eastern seaboard. That includes major cities like New York and Houston. Our chief climate correspondent, Bill Weir, is following the story and joins us now live. Good to have you with us, Bill.
So, hi, Linda.
The study looked at 32 major cities along the U.S. coast, and the forecast is so much worse than we expected, right?
Yeah, really, because it's the first time they've looked at both sea level rise from the melting ice caps, and of course, water expands as it heats up, so that's causing the rise at the beach. But then there is subsidence. And this could be, as you mentioned, pumping too much groundwater. It could be seismic activity that shifts the ground. In the Gulf Coast, it's a lot of oil and gas that deflates the ground as well. And the Mississippi River is not recharging the sediment there like it did before humanity shaped it up. So if you look at the map, you'll see the darker areas on this coastal map are in the Gulf Coast areas there. Fewer populations along there. But a place like Miami, for example, they predict over 100,000 people will be affected by 2050 because it is porous limestone. There's no real way to hedge against there as well. But all the way up from Charleston to Boston, all of those cities could be vulnerable. This is Miami Beach, actually, where they raised the building codes there to try to adjust for this as it's happening. But, you know, it's the have or the have-nots on what to do about it.
Yeah, so you're pointing out what Miami is doing, but what else can local governments do, Bill, when it comes to addressing this problem?
Well, Charleston, for example, they have plans to build a $1 billion seawall, but that would only protect about 20% of the city, the historic district there as well. It's hard to engineer something like that in South Florida just because of the geology that happens. New York City has plans to build seawalls around Wall Street and those places. But this is hugely expensive, and a lot of folks who go to the beach on the East Coast don't realize that municipalities spend millions of dollars a year either trucking in or dredging sand from the bottom of the ocean and pumping it to give the appearance that the beach is stable, whereas erosion is just taking them away. You can see that on the Barrier Islands really dramatically. But all told, worst case scenario, this would affect about 1 in 50 people who live along the coast by the middle of this century. Over 500 square miles, you know, 340,000 acres of coastland affected by this as well. And again, more information for people to plan and think about when it comes to real estate, when it comes to development, on how to live with this sort of new world.
Mm, yeah. All right. Bill Weir, as always, good to have you with us. Thanks so much
you
for
bet.
Joining us.
Thanks, Linda.
Well, still to come, will Barbie have enough Kenergy to take home some Oscars this weekend? How last year's summer blockbuster was able to reboot an already iconic brand, and what the toy maker Mattel is doing for an encore. Welcome back to First Move. Well, in last year's summer blockbuster film Barbie, there was, of course, Weird Barbie, Stereotypical Barbie, and Lawyer Barbie. And this weekend, Barbie fans are hoping to witness Oscar-winning Barbie. Well, despite being shut out of some of the major categories, the Barbie movie is up for 8 Academy Awards, including Best Picture. The movie has already racked up sizable wins for toy maker Mattel, which has seen Barbie sales soar. Mattel is wasting no time plotting its next brand reboot. Elizabeth Wagmeister has the story.
Hi, Barbie!
Hi, Ken!
The billion-dollar doll is now headed to the Academy Awards, celebrating 8 Oscar nominations and the highest-grossing movie of 2023. Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie's live-action film hauled in $1.4 billion worldwide, catapulting the doll's maker, Mattel, from a once-struggling toy company into a Hollywood IP player.
We always had high expectations. And the fact is, when we started this journey, it was never about making a movie to sell toys. It was about creating a cultural event.
That may be so. But the movie from Warner Brothers Pictures, which shares the same parent company as CNN, did help Mattel sell a lot more Barbies and improve the company's bottom line.
We did see very strong performance for Barbie, especially in the fourth quarter, where sales grew 24% relative to last year.
Sales fueled by a mega $150 million marketing campaign, largely financed by Warner Brothers Pictures, that made the 65-year-old Barbie ubiquitous. Searches for pink clothing jumped 416%, according to List. She even had her own meal at select Burger King locations.
We've always had a strong affinity with the brand, with kids and with parents, but we've now got young adults re-emerging, getting sort of re-energized about the brand because of the movie, and they want more of it.
Mattel execs are hoping to strike gold, or pink, again, by applying the Barbie strategy to other properties. The company is currently developing more than a dozen movies and 35 TV shows.
This is very much about transforming Mattel from being a toy manufacturing company that was making items to an IP company that is managing franchises.
It's not a sure bet. Theaters overcrowded with reboots and sequels have created Hollywood franchise fatigue. The once unstoppable Marvel Studios hit a historic box office low with its most recent comic book adaptation. But the Mattel CEO says they are clear-eyed about the risks.
We're not saying that every movie will be the next Barbie. It's about quality and about being original and doing something that will stand out.
Mattel is getting into business with Jennifer Lopez, who is producing an animated Bob the Builder movie, Tom Hanks, who will star as the astronaut action figure Major Matt Mason, and J.J. Abrams, who will produce Hot Wheels for the big screen, movies based on Magic 8 Ball, Uno, Barney, and American Girl are also in the works.
It's not just about films, and it's not just about Barbie. It's also television, it's consumer product and merchandise, theme parks, music, live events, digital, gaming.
If Mattel's plan works, it seems a toy manufacturer could soon be making a lot more money from much more than toys.
Elizabeth Wagmeister joins us now live. Good to have you with us. So Barbie really struck a chord when Greta Gerwig wasn't nominated for Best Director and Margot Robbie missed out on Best Actress. The film certainly generated a cultural conversation about their snubs. So what are their chances going into the Oscars?
You're absolutely correct. Just even the snubs generated huge conversation, which really showcases how much of a chord this film struck around the world. People rallied around it when it was doing well, and they rallied around it when it wasn't doing well at the Oscars. But to be fair, going into the Academy Awards this weekend, it has 8 nominations, which is obviously no small feat, even though Greta Gerwig was not nominated for Best Director and Margot Robbie was not nominated for Best Actress, both women still are nominated. Greta in the adapted screenplay category and Margot as a producer because the film is nominated for Best Picture. Now, its best chances to win are probably in original song for Billie Eilish. She has been winning every award throughout award season. And also, let's not forget, Ryan Gosling, who is nominated, is performing his hit song, I'm Just Ken, on the Oscars stage. So that will also be a big moment at this Sunday's Oscars. And America Ferrera is also nominated for Supporting Actress, and she was one of the welcome surprises when the nominations came out. So definitely a big night for Barbie, and of course, a huge year for Barbie. It made $1.4 billion. You can't call yourself a loser when you made $1.4 billion.
Exactly. Smashing box office success. Good to have you with us. We might chat Monday after the Oscars. Elizabeth, thanks so much. Well, finally, on First Move, from one pop icon to another, actor and singer Kylie Minogue is being honored with her very own Barbie doll to celebrate International Women's Day this Friday. She's one of 8 entertainers who have had a one-off Barbie doll made in their likeness. Others include Viola Davis, Shania Twain, and Dame Helen Mirren. Well, Kylie shared these pictures on social media of her Barbie, which is wearing the iconic red costume from the music video for her 2023 smash hit, Padam Padam. Kylie says her younger self would not believe what's happening right now. Well, thanks so much. That wraps up our show for tonight. I'm Linda Kincaid. I'll see you tomorrow night.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.